Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to this very special and shorter than usual preview of the latest Disney Plus MCU show, Echo. Picking up after the events of Hawkeye, can that really have been 2 years ago already? The show continues the story of Alacqua Cox's Maya Lopez, who was last seen shooting the man she considered to be her uncle, Vincent D'Onofrio's Wilson Fisk, aka the Kingpin, in the face. You thought your family had issues. This 5-episode limited series has been trumpeted as Marvel Studios' first proper toe dip back into the bone-crunching, blood-soaked waters that came with the territory on Netflix Marvel shows like Daredevil, The Punisher, Luke Cage, and Jessica Jones. And it's also something of a continuation of Lowe's, with Charlie Cox due to show up at some point as Matt Murdock, aka Daredevil, the man without fear, in whose pages Echo first debuted. But this isn't just going to be a stepping stone to the eagerly anticipated Daredevil, Born Again. This is focused on Maya, who is a deaf Native American vigilante with a whole lot of anger issues. One of the directors on the show is Navajo filmmaker Sydney Freeland, and when she came to London recently, I sat down with her to talk about her personal connection to this material and just what exactly we can expect from Echo when it drops on Disney Plus on Wednesday, Jan 10th in the UK. I had a great time talking to Sydney, and I hope you guys have a great time listening to it as well. Do please enjoy. Sydney Freeland, welcome to the Empire Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me how you came on board, first of all.
I became aware of the Echo Project actually from my email. A director pair that I know called Bert and Birdie.
Oh yeah.
I got an email from them. I want to say it was early 2020, just before COVID hit, and the email said, "Do you know any deaf Native American actresses?" and I was like, "Nope. Good luck."
Let me just go to my spreadsheet.
Yeah. Let me go to my database. They were, you know, they co-directed on Hawkeye, yeah. And yeah, they were looking to cast Maya Lopez.
And the
Hawkeye team and casting folks, they're the ones that found Alacqua Cox. Mm-hmm. That's how I first became aware that the project or that the character was going to be brought into the MCU.
Yeah.
And then as Hawkeye came out, and then I think I learned about the TV series through everyone else as I saw the press announcement that they're going to do an Echo TV series. And I was like, oh man, that's amazing. I would so love to do that, and I would so love to put my fingerprints on that. But there's no way that I'm going to get a call. There's no way we can get in there. And I was able to get a call, and I was able to get a meeting, and I was able to, you know, kind of pitch the project to Kevin, and that's really kind of how I came on board.
That's interesting. So what was your pitch to Kevin?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, obviously you go in and when you pitch a project, it's just pre-AI. So like, you know, typically what you do is you make a lookbook, you know,
a
lookbook and the way I do it, it's basically a glorified PowerPoint presentation, right? So it's like, but you're trying to create the visual look, feel, style of the series that you're going to portray. And as I've heard it described, you're trying to paint this series on the back of their eyelids, you know? And so really in building and in trying to create the visual style and the aesthetic and in pitching with Kevin, the one thing that stood out to me was, you know, this is what I told him in the room. I said, listen, I grew up reading Marvel comic books, mm-hmm. you know, I was a Marvel fan growing up. I remember being a teenager reading like, oh man, this would make a great movie. It's never going to happen. This is like Sam Raimi Spider-Man, right? This is like in the 90s. And I think the only thing we had like Fantastic Four, but that was the shitty one, right? I'm sorry. We can't cuss.
Right? We can. We encourage it. Make it shitty.
What I talked to Kevin about was like, I said, I grew up reading Marvel comic books.
Yeah, yeah.
And I grew up going to powwows. Powwows are Native American competition gathering social event. And those two things never overlapped. And they never intersected with each other. And the great thing about the series is that those two things are going to come smashing and overlapping together. And the opportunity to do that would just be like, it would be incredibly exciting, but also terrifying, you know, because it's something that, you know, is a little bit of untread ground a little bit. So yeah. that was kind of the conversation.
What was in the lookbook? Anything? Were you using specific references from
Mad Max Fury Road?
Okay.
Atomic Blonde, I think some John Wick.
So you're setting the bar pretty high in terms of action here.
Big swings. Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. So that's what we can expect from Echo, because in the few moments we got to spend with Maya in Hawkeye, there was a fair amount of ass to be kicked.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but that was also talking about the conversation was the thing to me that was interesting about Maya Lopez is the fact that she was a villain.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but the response was like, let's lean into that. Let's see where that goes. Let's go down that rabbit hole. Let's see how far we can push that envelope. And that just very organically kind of resulted in, I think, like, we didn't set out to make a TVMA series. I think we kind of arrived at that by trying to push the envelope in everything from our action sequences to some of the other content in the show. But that was also kind of the point, right? Like, we wanted to show that, we're not dealing with this like fate of the universe. These aren't cosmic consequences. This is a story on a little more of a human scale. It's a little more street level, but that means that people die. People get killed, bones break, so on and so forth. But all of that sort of was dictated by the story.
Is that a natural extension as well of having Daredevil and the Kingpin in it? And in terms of it, it's obviously a continuation of Maya's journey from Hawkeye. Hawkeye was this frothy, fun Christmas tinge show that also had outbreaks of extreme violence from time to time. But porting those guys over from the Netflix shows, which were hard-edged and brutal and flecked with blood, does that automatically as well, I don't know, does that inform the tone? Or are you taking the tone from Maya?
Yeah, everything, all roads lead to Echo, right? All roads lead to and from Maya Lopez. And so, that being said, I'm a huge fan of the Netflix series, the Daredevil series, right? But again, in looking at who the character was, what were her circumstances, what was her situation, like, again, one of the interesting things about for me was, okay, this is, how does a deaf indigenous girl from Oklahoma become a top lieutenant in Kingpin's army?
Yeah.
That was an incredibly exciting thing to explore. And for myself, being indigenous, I could come up with a line of how one could get there. But I think for folks who aren't, who might see being Native American as different or other, or, an unfamiliar experience, it was incredibly familiar to myself. And so being able to kind of like lean into that and explore that was really, that kind of dictated the tone. And again, look, we come into the series, like, she is, from people who have seen Hawkeye, she is a top lieutenant in Kingpin's army. So we didn't want to shy away from that. We wanted to lean into it.
Well, it's interesting because obviously the last time we saw her as well, she was rebelling in fairly dramatic fashion against the big man himself. Can you talk about the repercussions of that? It's not set in New York, so there seems to be repercussions right away.
Yeah. I think spoilers for Hawkeye. Kingpin is instrumental in the death of Maya Lopez's father.
Yeah.
And when she learns that he is, she exacts revenge and she shoots him. And that whole plot is actually instrumental to our entire series and our tagline, no bad deed goes unpunished.
Yes.
So that's what we get to, that's our jumping off point for Echo.
Can you talk more about exploring Maya and where she goes in this? I'm very interested in this level, this idea of it being street level and set is slightly different. And
yeah, so I think within that too, it's also this sort of, there's an exploration of trauma, how it affects us, how others are affected, how we cope with it. But there's also this exploration of family, but more specifically, like, the definition of family, And on one hand, we have, when we come into the series, Maya Lopez, she's from Oklahoma, but by the time we come into the series, she's probably more New York than she is Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And she's firmly planted in the Kingpin sort of world. So her definition of family coming into this series is slightly different than one that you and I might have. You know, it's probably a little bit more of a conditional definition of family. And then as we introduce her to our Oklahoma family and the Oklahoma side, we're going to be introduced to a different definition of family. And we're going to challenge Maya's preconceived notions of what that is. And, you know, she's going to be forced to make a choice between basically we're going to challenge her worldview and we're going to back her into a corner and make her make, and she's going to have to make a choice.
Those conversations with Alakwa, what were those conversations like about playing this character and extending this character as well? Because obviously Maya was a supporting character in Hawkeye. Here she's the lead.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the first conversations with Alakwa was, it was actually, it was funny because I think one of, if not the first question she asked was, can I do my own stunts?
No.
And then again, because, you know, coming off of an entire film experience being a few days on Hawkeye to being number one on a call sheet a Marvel series that shot for over 90 days, you know, you have to have a certain type of inner strength and drive, as an individual, let alone an actor, to be able to do that. And she showed up and she showed up time and time again. You know, she was in there with the stunt coordinator. She was in there with the choreographer. She was in there with the rehearsing for the fights. But then she was also, she was able to access an incredibly emotional place with the character. And if anything, that's one of the things I'm most proud about in the series is the performances Alakwa has given. One of my favorite scenes in the entire series is a scene with two actors where not a single verbal word is spoken. It brings me to tears every time I see it.
Amazing. Well, I want to go back to that email you got from Bert and Bertie. Who sent it, by the way? Was it Bert or Bertie?
It was Bert.
Okay. Excellent. It's the sort of stuff that keeps me awake at night. So you get this email going, do you know any deaf Native American actresses? And Alakwa gets cast ultimately. Can you talk about exploring both of those aspects of that character, the deaf side, first of all?
Yeah, the deaf side. And so, yeah, so representation. That's a no-brainer for me. I come from multiple marginalized communities. And so, you know, like what is sort of foreign to most people is just everyday life for me.
Of course, yeah.
But I'm also, that being said, I'm not deaf, right?
Yeah.
So one of the first things that we did is that, yes, we had deaf writers in the writer's room. We had deaf consultants behind the scene. We had an American Sign Language master that was translating our scripts into ASL in Doug Ridloff. We had, we had deaf actors and actresses in front of the camera. And, but for myself personally, it was important that I had some basic level of communication where I could connect with Alakwa. You know, I wanted to be able to just have a conversation with her without, you know, having to go through multiple parties. And so we, meaning myself and my department heads and my crew, we all took American Sign Language classes like from the very beginning. And there were a number of positive consequences that actually came from that. And it actually ended up dictating our entire visual style of how we shot the film. So what do I mean by that? Like, I mean, like in the process of taking ASL classes, one thing I learned is that, you know, like, you know, as we're speaking to each other right now, the words coming out of my mouth are the text, right?
Yeah,
the way I deliver those words, that's the subtext. Like, so for example, if you ask me like, how are you? And I said, I'm fine. The text is I'm fine. The subtext is I'm fine. But if you said, how are you? And I said, I'm fine. The subtext is I'm not, right? But in sign language, it's a different sort of way to get that same, in order to get that same emotional context. When you sign, it's typically like sort of here and here. And I'm audio, so I don't know if you can see me, but it's like typically like sort of chest area and just onto the side of the head.
Yeah, yeah.
The signing is the text. The facial expression is the subtext. But you need both of those things to get the full emotional context of what's being expressed and portrayed. And so what that meant is that this became a close-up in our TV show, right?
Yeah.
So so typically, like a typical TV close-up is kind of, you see the forehead and maybe the chin.
Yeah.
Right? And so, but in our series, a close-up is kind of, you see the top of the head and you see like, basically like to the chest area or upper
abdomen. To allow room for...
Upper abdomen, yeah. So specifically, so you could see the signing and you can see the face to get the full emotional context of what's being portrayed. So in that case, and because we were so early in the process, and in talking with my cinematographer, and you know, and that's where the conversations were, like, you know, can we get the emotion if we're not seeing like a close up on the face? And the answer now, with all the hindsight of having completed the series, is absolutely yes, you can, and it can be even in some cases even more emotional.
Yeah, sometimes it can be the over reliance on the
the
tight close up.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And then just real quick, just a couple of last questions. Can you talk about the exploring the indigenous side of Maya and what that meant to you personally?
On the indigenous side of things, you know, it was, again, representation, you know, representation. I hope that's not coming across as like sarcastic, but it's like, it's just, to me, it's a no-brainer, right? But for everyone else, it's like, we need representation. I was like, yeah, of course we do, you know. Why not? Why wouldn't we have representation? So for myself, I think the outside world typically kind of looks at indigenous culture as like one big monolith, right? And every native culture is different. Every native language is different. The cultures, traditions have their own unique background and so on and so forth. And so, for myself, I'm Navajo, right? I'm Navajo. I grew up in the southwestern United States. The tribe we're portraying is the Choctaw. And they were traditionally from the southeast United States before they were forcibly removed by Andrew Jackson and put on the Trail of Tears and relocated to Oklahoma, which is a whole other thing. But because I'm not Choctaw, it was in the same way that we hired deaf people
to immerse yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we brought on Choctaw writers, Choctaw consultants, Choctaw language experts. We even had Choctaw actors in front of the camera, you know. And we, you know, again, early on, we went to the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, presented the project to them and said, listen, like, I'm not here to tell you what we're going to do. I'm here to do two things. One is ask your permission. And then two, create a dialogue. And we want your feedback. We want your advice. We want to know, where are the boundaries? What are the things that are culturally sensitive? You know, what are the things, what are the boundaries? Like, we want to be able to kind of like push the envelope, but let's define where the edge of the envelope is, you know, together. And I think that's, sadly, that's something that is not traditionally done in Hollywood. Yeah. And for myself, growing up in the southwestern United States, like I've got relatives that were extras in like John Ford Westerns, you know, back in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And they were treated like cattle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine.
So that was something that was very important for us.
Amazing. I've got to let you go, Sydney, but I just want to ask one last question about the action, just to explore that a little bit more in terms of those references you said earlier on, Mad Max, John Wick, Atomic Blonde. So that indicates to me we're going to see a lot of action, maybe a few oners. And can you talk about that, what we can expect, and dropping Maya and Charlie Cox? We're expecting something from him as well as Daredevil. What can you say about that?
Yeah, you know, there's a scene in the pilot that we've sort of internally come to call the birth of a villain scene, right? it is a oner. Spoilers for that. but the reason that it's a oner is because on the page what leapt out to me on the page is that Maya Lopez enters the scene as a teenage girl, and she leaves as a cold-blooded killer. And so I wanted to see that evolution and progression happen in real time. And it was, we knew it was ambitious to do a oner of that scale and that magnitude on a TV schedule. But in talking with, you know, my stunt coordinator, Mark Cizak, and the choreography of everything, we decided like, let's do it. Let's commit. We're gonna go all in, and we're gonna take a big swing, and we might miss, but you know, dang it, if the thing hits, it's gonna hit. but again, it all stems from story and character, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that kind of dictated our approach.
Amazing. And what can people expect from Daredevil in this? I know he's a supporting character in this, but yeah. What can people expect?
I think we definitely want to acknowledge Maya's origin in, which was, or her introduction, which was in the Daredevil series. We want to honor and respect that. I'll leave it at that and just say, you got to see the series to watch out.
Amazing.
To find out, yeah.
Sydney, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much, and thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Sydney Freeland, and you can see her work by watching all 5 episodes of Echo, which drop at the same time on Disney+ for Wednesday, Jan 10th. And keep in peel for a spoiler special on the show as well if you don't already subscribe to our spoiler specials. My word, a bounty awaits. Go to empire.supportingcast.fm and sign up either monthly or annually. You won't regret it. All right, that's enough for me. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.